Does any of those who've been making presentations wish to comment on the others? Any quick response before we move into a broader discussion?
To share Steffi's view that it's not a revolution. I think nanoscience, nanotechnology is coming into the mainstream of science, and therefore it will have to take its chances in terms of economic and social benefit in much the same way as any other technology does.
Comments from those on the panel to each other?
I'd like to ask Peter whether... can you track compliance with the ISO standards? Do you know how many people are adopting them and using them? Because this is something that's very interesting to
No, because ISO does not carry out certification. Certification is done by independent bodies. So it's really up to those groups. The only standard I can refer to are ISO 9000, ISO 14000, which has about a million companies, or in excess of a million companies worldwide certified to them, but I don't know about these others.
Okay, well, let's open us up now for questions and comments. Perhaps, again, please introduce yourself and keep question or comment fairly brief so we can move around the room. Who would like to start? One thing actually I will say, I mean, you do have in your packets a list of those who've registered for today's workshop. We do actually have people here from seven or eight different diplomatic missions, as well as others from the international community. I do feel very free, if you'd like to intervene and make a point or ask a question, as we have this conversation in the British context, but also in the global context. But who would like to begin? Yes, please.
Sophie Roxburgh, Oxford University. I'm interested in terms of, firstly, thank you to everybody for the presentations. I have been really interested. But I'm interested in terms of the engineering and how you get behavioural change within engineers to take on a more ethical approach to biomaterials. I wonder if anyone has any thoughts there.
So to take on a...
sort of the ethical approach to using nanotechnology and nanomaterials within engineering. Because, of course, we all know the traditional approach. I say this with my husband being an engineer, I have to admit that. But he is not particularly the most ethical of people.
Well, who would like to?
I don't see that there are really different ethical questions for nanotechnology than there are for technology in general. That's my personal opinion. So I'm not sure why you have to get them to take an ethical approach to nanomaterials or engineering. We want everyone to take an ethical approach, period.
As someone who's been teaching ethics to engineers for a number of years, actually, at the University of Surrey and elsewhere, I have to say that I think it's very important to raise ethical awareness amongst professional people who are very narrowly trained. Ethics does not enter, generally, into the curriculum of engineers at any level. It is beginning to, and I've been part of that, but the result is that they are... Almost, you might say handicapped by an inability to see their subject or their discipline in ethical terms at all. I mean, for example, they won't have the language to discuss the social and ethical dimensions of their work. And just to try and make one specific about this, I think ethical design of whatever it is that technicians and technologists are doing is a major ethical deficit at the moment. And the reason for that is that when engineers design something, they're generally trying to solve a very narrow technical problem, devoid of any wider context. Maybe that's because what they've been paid to do, or maybe because they have tunnel vision, or because that's how they see their role. So they are not feeding into the design of whatever it is they're designing, environmental, public health, occupational, and other possible harms, because they don't see it as part of their role. They think someone else will pick it up further down the chain. And I really do think that this is an important issue, and it really has to change. And at the moment, we have extremely clever and specialized people working in nanotechnology who are, if you like, handicapped to think about the ethical issues because it is no part of their educational training. That has to be fixed.
I think we're being a little bit unfair here, and we are.
Definitely.
We are sort of pigeonholing an entire discipline of engineers that think if you were to have this discussion, and this is not the first time, nothing against this discussion at all, this is not the first time that it happens. I think if you were to read the transcript of what we're talking about here and were to erase the words nanotechnology and erase the words engineer and scientist and replace them with other things like finance and the banking industry, I'm sure it would reach us as well.
Yes.
Yes.
Certainly. Might be more apt, actually.
Just to respond on that, I'm an actuary, and we have a code of ethics. If you do something that doesn't sort of stand up to your scrutiny, then you can be thrown out of your profession. So I don't know if there is a similar.
There's ethics and there's ethics. You know, there's professional ethics, which is very narrowly defined in terms of some narrow boundaries of conduct and so on. And there's ethics, if you like, social ethics, political ethics, wider concerns about the environment, public health, and so on. That is a wider social context for ethical concern, and it's that I'm actually referring to,
rather than narrow professional
codes of conduct, etc.
I think this point is well taken. It seems to be part of the problem with the way in which we use the term ethics and the concept ethics in these discussions, and that we tend to work out of the three issues here. One is a very narrow context, obviously, which the genetics discussion was a classic example where you had recombinant DNA interventions and all sorts of profound potential ethical issues being raised by a particular technology. Secondly, you have the professional ethics discussion, in that there are ethical statements adopted by all professions. By definition, professions have ethical statements, and by some other human activities too, which tend to be focused on, not stealing the next guy's engineering project, and so on. They tend to be very formalistic and very proper, but very formalistic. But thirdly, we have these substantive questions, which are the reasons why there's so much anxiety about nanotechnology, because on the one hand, its potential applications in restructuring human nature and human capacities. On the other hand, its capacity to concern people you might be doing that. Hence all of this stakeholder input concern. So I think there's a problem with the terminology, and it's one reason why, whenever I get involved with discussions, I try to reshape the discussion by talking basically about what you have to engineer into the innovation process. That basically both markets and regulatory regimes depend wholly upon values, and therefore that ethical issues aren't sort of adjunct particular problem, firefighting exercises to be dealt with in the fringes. Neither are they merely formalistic questions for sort of good order within an organization and a profession. But in fact, they relate to the fundamental values of the human community, which are central if you're going to have successful innovation, both in regulatory and market terms. We may come back to this, but I think there are several different things moving along here in the ethical discussion. And that ultimately, everything is about human values. You haven't got to be particularly ethical to have a vision of values that determines your notion of what is appropriate. Hands are beginning to go up now. Anybody at the back? I'm just looking around here. People who've been timid so far. The very back in the middle. Do introduce yourself.
Then it's combined with something else, which can then go on to do
that's so transparency and moving toward a declaration of Helsinki for nanotechnology and the rest. Any other points, fresh points from around the back there? From people who've not been too inhibited to contribute yet? You're not exactly inhibited, but we'll come to you, yes.
Hi, I'm Pete. Well, I'm Irish, a journalist, so maybe there's one that's sort of sitting there and sci-fi journalist. And on that front, one of the things I'd like to say is that the journalist's job is not to promote, that's a PR job. Mm. Our job is to question, which is, yeah, if we don't get that, we miss journalism with PR documents, therefore promotion. Our job is to fundamentally question. One of the questions I'd like to ask, though, is within that, as I said, we're now got terms with nanotech where we've only got materials that do only what we want them to do. Now, that's the thing that really worries me. The whole thing about nanotech is they don't only do what we want them to do. If you go back to the sun cream, there is an issue. They do do jolly good jobs of reflecting sunlight. And we don't understand about the absorption. We don't know what happens once they've been absorbed. And so that's why there's a legitimate fear about it. And a legitimate fear about sort of blanket statements that, wow, this is all okay. Without that underwriting thing, you're saying we need to ask some questions about it. So it's those sort of sweeping statements that are kind of worrying.
Did you have a sort of question that you were moving toward?
Within the sunscreen, then, let's go for that one. They might reflect quite well, but do you absolutely know that they don't do anything else, like the nanoparticles get absorbed into the skin? And if so, are they safe inside their skin lifetime?
Go on, you're the nanoparticle lady, Steffi.
Yeah, I can tell you even more than that. I can tell you that even if they do get absorbed, the slight problem we have in this room is that not only do I beg you that for each one of you, everyone has a different notion of what we're talking about, and terminology doesn't help here. The bit that we can talk about is the bit that is regulatable, and that is applications and products are regulated. And talking about the underlying ethics and a potential regulation instead of an ethics code instead of a regulation for an enabling technology, I'm afraid as good as it sounds, is not possible, because what we are basing our regulation on and what everything is anchored on is the regulation of specific products. And here we have a technology that enables various different applications and various different products. Talking about the specific application of nanomaterials in sunscreens, which is now, as Jeff pointed out, part of the first regulation that actually mentions nanomaterials with the specific demand of labeling, notification, and additional risk assessment. The risk in this context is not to be confused with ethics, the risk that it could be doing something, morphing into something else. It is a real risk that stems from the classic toxicological equation that said risk is the product of hazard times exposure. You either measure hazard and make sure that that is close to zero, or you measure, and you can never do that. Any substance always turns into being hazardous at one point or another, or you measure exposure and keep exposure to a minimum. When you say these nanoparticles get absorbed through the skin, exposure is not zero. So what you do is you make sure that the hazard is close to zero. So that's what the cosmetics industry did. They actually intravenously, without having to do that, because that's not a requirement under the current or the new cosmetics regulation, used the materials and injected them intravenously into their test systems. Here, in this case, the 3 R's means not using any animals, but that's what they needed to do, to show that even if you do get the full dose of all your nanoparticles absorbed through the skin, which we can show is not normally the case, they don't do any harm. But that is brought down to a fragment of everything that we're talking about. We're talking about one application, we're talking about one nanomaterial, we're talking about a very quantifiable equation that is risk equals hazard time exposure.
Now, any further comment from the panel on this risk question? Anyone want to disagree with what Steffi is saying or add to it? Because on this very specific question of what we know about the risk of nanoparticles. Yeah.
I think that, well, as a non-specialist, I'm not a toxicologist, but the issue about sun creams and titanium dioxide nanoparticles is still controversial. Because one NGO has come out and said, you know,
we've got it wrong. There are plenty of other NGOs up there that are still saying, be very careful. Because we've got to remember that the tests are usually, you know, in vivo or more usually in vitro, in a test tube, as it were. And there's questions about whether they apply to the living human organism. There are questions about damaged skin, whether there's sunburn, whether there's skin of the elderly people, membranes such as your lips, your eyes. There's so many questions. Then the questions over the time scale involved. Putting sun cream on for a few weeks or even years may be okay, but 20 years of use, we don't still really know. There's still plenty. I think the real issue here, you see, to come back to the general issue, which was raised by the journalists, is in a nutshell, is control. Whenever you've got any new scientific development, there's the issue, if you're going to apply it, how do you control it? That's always been the case. You know, I mean, electricity, lighting up this room. You know, a wonderful invention. When it first came along, it was killing people in the school. Because, you know, there's a question of how do you actually control it? It's the same with nuclear technology, of course. And the issue here is one of control. And so the secondary question is whether there's something special about nanotechnology which makes it more difficult to control, or whether we have to control it in special ways. I'm one of those people that thinks that there is something special about it, which has to do with complexity and uncertainty, and that we do need to devise very different ways of controlling it if we're going to develop it. But then that becomes a technical question of how do you control it, given that the surface area to volume ratio is huge, which means the nanoparticle is extremely reactive. Anything we design may recognize a multiplicity of other molecules in the human body and disrupt systems. This is not something we've had to contend with, except when we get to the nanoscale. But it doesn't mean that it's uncontrollable. It means we have to be very inventive in finding ways of controlling it before rushing to the market with it.
I'll just throw out a factoid here which may disturb, encourage, or otherwise. So some of you will know in the American context there's been a lot of debate about basically where the risk should be assigned here. And there was a famous letter to the Wall Street Journal, editorial of the Wall Street Journal, and a comment, as you can call it in Britain, from chairman of DuPont and some leader of one of the environmental organizations about 6 years ago, asking for an increase for the Environmental Protection Agency, EPA, toxicology screening for nanoparticles from $5 million a year to $100 million. So an agreement from a major chemical company and from an environmental group. The Bush administration, which found ways to offend pretty much everybody on some of these issues, ignored it. The Obama administration has also ignored it. And in fact, at the event which I hosted in Washington a few weeks ago on nanotechnology, Nora Savage, who is the lead on nano for the Environmental Protection Agency, EPA, said of the $5 million, which has typically been assigned to the EPA for nanotox screening, this year, for the first time, it's been cut. Now, of course, this is partly government making a decision about where the risk is to be borne and pushing it back on industry. In the European situation, you probably have a somewhat more community acceptance of risk in this whole discussion. But that's an incidental case study in how this very particular question, which is of concern partly purely from a perceived risk point of view, because it's such a controversial kind of question, but also substantively. In that same context, I was told by one EPA person in public that it obviously costs several $1 million to give a full tox screening to one substance at one scale, that therefore it was simply impossible to do this. But I think there are fundamental risk questions here which have to be recognized, both in terms of perception, in GMO hostile Europe, which is of course the major concern of the American industry in this case, as well as a substance. Any further questions on the specific issue of risk, particles, tox, and so on? Yes.
It's Ruth from psychologist from China. I worked for the course for 8 years. And I just have a general question about regulating the nanoscale. I've heard it in many comments, which is really comfortable, so have better understanding about this. But when I was having education at Imperial College, I don't really, as a hydrologist, when I was educated in Tsinghua University doing some building materials, none of us has been educated about nanotechnology. There was kind of a lack of knowledge on this on the subject. But I think when it's talking about regulating, is it international or just the UK or just Europe? if Europe set up a regulation, for example, China, what are they going to do? Are they going to accept your regulation or something? I think this ought to be a global sort of collaborative activity. As a biocentre, maybe my suggestion is to include as many countries as possible. Because, for example, if you talk about marketing in China, it's got a huge potential marketing about building material. But if a lot of people about my age, my generation in China,